All right. Welcome to the first episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur Legal Marketing. I'm your host, Stephen Kent, and twice a month we're going to be bringing you the tips, strategies, resources, and the news and trends from the legal marketing industry that you need to effectively market your law firm. In this podcast, we're going to cover all sorts of topics from across legal and digital marketing fields, including content marketing and management, marketing strategy, branding, SEO, paid advertising, video production, and a lot more. We're also going to be featuring interviews with members of the LaFleur team, other experts from the legal marketing industry, hopefully even some attorneys, if we can get them to carve out some time from their busy schedules. If you're listening to this podcast, but you're not yet familiar with LaFleur Legal Marketing, we're a full-service legal marketing agency that works with law firms across the country to provide holistic, data-driven solutions for their marketing needs. We're equipped to handle every aspect of a law firm's digital marketing strategy, and we really take pride in delivering those services with a degree of transparency that distinguishes us from the competition. You know, if you've worked with a marketing agency before, maybe had a bad experience. You get monthly bills, they're not itemized, you know, they're difficult to figure out. You're just never quite sure what you're paying for. LaFleur Legal Marketing, we always make sure you understand exactly what you're paying for, where your marketing dollars are being allocated, and how your marketing campaign success is going to be measured. And we deliver on the services we promise, and sometimes we even go beyond. To learn more about LaFleur Legal Marketing, you can check out our website at LaFleur.marketing. That's LaFleur, LaFleur.marketing. We got tons of great resources there for law firms, including a blog that's packed with informative articles that can help you market your law firm more effectively. If you're really just getting started in terms of marketing your law firm, we also have a free ebook called How to Develop a Scalable, Sustainable Marketing Plan for Your Law Firm. And that's a wonderful resource to start building your digital marketing knowledge around. It's really kind of a crash course in the fundamentals of marketing for lawyers, including, you know, how you can develop your strategic approach, how to structure a marketing campaign, how to create personas, and all the other kind of fundamental tools and strategies that you need in your toolkit. So to download that ebook for free, just go to LaFleur.marketing/plan and fill out the brief form there. Before we get started, a little bit about myself. Again, my name is Stephen Kent, and I'm a managing editor for content here at LaFleur Legal Marketing. I work with all of our legal clients to figure out the direction and strategy of their content and then execute the creation of that content. You know, from writing and editing blog posts and ebooks to building branding language, scripting videos, creating press releases, and any other client content needs. I'm also a journalist by training and still an occasional freelance reporter, actually. So this is my first experience with radio, though. So I'm excited to host this podcast and, you know, flex those muscles a little bit. So without any further ado, let's just dive into the first episode of Legal Marketing Radio. So here on the podcast, we have Dave Vandewa, our content director and kind of legal marketing extraordinaire. He's been at this longer than anyone here. And, you know, in addition to being an accomplished writer and, you know, legal marketer, Dave also teaches at a local university, so he's just a great resource to turn to. He really knows how to break this stuff down and, you know, share it with people. So what we want to talk about this week is how to create a better blog post. Dave actually wrote a recent blog article on the LLM site on this topic. So we're going to have Dave share some of his insights that he gathered and just some of the stuff he's learned for, you know, doing this, you know, every day for 3 years, really. But we want to start out and just, you know, start out with a basic question that I think a lot of attorneys are going to be asking, which is, you know, do we really need to blog? Do we need to have a blog? And do we need to create blog content on a regular basis? You know, if an attorney were to ask you that, Dave, what would you say? Like, why do you think that's important?
Yeah, we do get some pushback on that occasionally. And the important thing about blogging is important for a lot of different reasons. One of the reasons is that it supports your main content on your site. So every blog article you do is going to bring people to your site. It's going to bring traffic to the other main portions of your site, like your practice area pages, your homepage, your contact page. And so it's sort of like the hook that brings people in, and then it reels them into your main site and the pages that matter the most to your website. Another really important reason that you blog is to keep your content fresh on your website. So Google cares about the freshness, how often you post and how frequently and how recently you have posted on your website, how often it's updated. And so blog content tells Google, hey, I'm still active. I'm an active website. I'm doing what I need to. And I'm providing new relevant content to people. And so those are sort of the big signals and some of the main reasons to blog, you know, among many others.
Got it. So why don't you maybe share with us, you know, a few of the things that, you know, that you broke down in the blog post that you wrote and maybe some other things that you didn't have time to get to. You know, what are the keys to creating a better blog post? I think the focus of the article was really, you know, how to craft a better blog post from the ground up. So why don't you walk us through that process a little bit and what it's like for you?
Yeah. So one of the things that I talked about is that every good blog post starts with a really good idea. In the writing process, I like to call that condensation. Because condensation is what, you know, that water that forms on the outside of your glass. And
like gathering water droplets,
yeah.
Ideas kind of.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. There's water in the air all around us. There's ideas, you know, in the air all around us, you know, whether it's in the news or it's something that you experience. There's ideas that we come across all the time. And what condensing does, just like there's water in the air all the time, is condensing makes those ideas real. You know, on a cold glass of water, the water that's in the air becomes real, and you can see it right there. And so condensing and ideation is this idea of, you know, there's ideas all around us and we want to find the good ones. You know, we want to be able to see them. And then from there, you can really work with those ideas and create something that's really great. And there's a huge focus right now on blogging more. You have to blog more. You have to do more blog posts. And to some extent, that's true. I think there is sort of a baseline limit. You know, maybe it's once a month or, you know, once every 2 weeks. That you really do kind of need to blog to get the real benefits of that. But I think the real important thing is to blog better. Your really good blog posts are going to pay dividends for such a really, really, really long time. And so blogging better is more important than blogging more, I guess.
Is there a minimum? I mean, do you think that, you know, if you're only blogging once a month or not even that often, I mean, is there a lower threshold on that? Like how often is, there's got to be some, you know, point where it's just not going to generate regular interest, right?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I'm not sure. You know, we've done some you know, people have looked at the data, and I think one of the things that people agree upon is that once a month is sort of your lower limit. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, there's a sort of heyday of blogging very recently where people were blogging every single day because they just wanted to put more content out there, taking a sort of a shotgun approach to content marketing, where maybe one of these five blog posts we wrote this week is going to do okay. And I think that mentality is slowly changing, which is a good thing. You know, there's enough garbage on the internet, as I explained in my article.
Yeah, it sounds good for writers to have this constant stream of content, but it's actually pretty awful because you usually can't, you know, devote enough time to anything to really achieve any, you know, any sense of quality. And the lengths are usually like, you know, 300, 400 words. And I think we're all glad to be rid of those kind of blog articles.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing, too, is that people look and they see the numbers and they read them the wrong way. You look at the data that's out there and they say, oh, I need to blog every day. All this data says that people who blog every day are doing better. And then they say, oh, it needs to be a certain length. I have to have a certain number of words in my blog post. And I think that's one of the things that's causing this sort of content fatigue that we're experiencing. And I think I've noticed it where you're reading stuff online now and it's all really long. It's all 1,200 words or longer. And there's a lot of data that says blog posts that are 1,200 words or longer do better, but everyone has seen that data. So then they think, oh, I have to make these blog posts that are 1,200 words or longer. But they're not adding any more substance. They're not blogging, making a better blog post.
Right. And it's interesting too, because we also have this data to show that very few people are reading through all this content. I mean, to the end, you know, it's like 5% of people that will actually finish a standard length article. So even as the content gets longer, fewer people are finishing it. So it seems like it's almost like a prestige game just to have that word count sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Or it's, you know, it's a way to measure, you know, how your writers are doing or how your marketing team is doing. Oh, they've written this many blog posts with this many words in them. But really what you want to look at is the long-term effects of your blog posts. You want to look at and see, okay, well, are my blog posts performing well? And if not, what can I do to improve them? And that's one of the things I talked about in my article as well. In that, you know, you have to go through this process of looking at and thinking about your blog post and then saying, okay, what's doing well, what's not. And then using that as a starting point for future blog posts.
Got it. Okay, so you kind of walked us through the ideation process. Do you have any tips for the execution, you know, to make the writing better? What can attorneys do, a few things, you know, to write better blog posts for readers?
Yeah, that's great. And I always encourage people to follow a writing process. It's something that we do here. And whether it's, you know, different people who are doing part of different parts of the writing process, who are, you know, more qualified to do one or the other, or it's one person who's making a deliberate attempt to go through the writing process. That starts with, again, idea development. You might have a good idea, and it might be a one-sentence idea, but you need to go through some more work on it to really flesh it out. And that'll make the writing a lot easier later on. So, you know, do a little quick outline, scratch outline. I always encourage people to do that to get started. That way you know you're going to cover the points that you really wanted to cover at the very beginning. If you just jump in and start typing, a lot of times you'll ramble on and not get anywhere.
Yeah.
Or you have to do a lot of rewriting later on because you've written a lot of pieces that, you know, that aren't good, and then you have to fix them. So yeah, you start with ideation and developing that idea. After that, you move into drafting. This is the sort of typical process that people think of when they think of writing. And what that involves primarily is just sitting in front of your computer and getting the work done. Once that's done, and I think this is the most crucial part really, is revising and editing. That's where you're going to get a lot of really good quality. You're going to look at it on the revising standpoint from the big picture, and you're going to say, all right, is there anything in here that doesn't need to be in here? And is there anything I'm missing that definitely needs to be in the piece of writing that I'm working on? Once you've looked at those big picture type things, then you can go into the editing phase. Some people kind of lump editing and proofing together into one very efficient chunk. I think they're kind of two separate things. You know, editing looks at the sentence level, you know, making sure everything looks good, fixing words that don't look right, choosing words that are more compelling. And then finally, once you've settled on all those things, then you can proof and just make sure everything's correct. You can justify why you put a comma somewhere and these sorts of things.
Got it. And the proofing process, too, I think, is a great time to bring out the old tip that your English teacher at some point probably tried to hammer into you, which is to read it out loud, right?
Yes.
That's always a thing that I feel like every writer knows you should do, but you find an excuse not to do it because you feel silly or you don't want to print it out or, you know, whatever is your excuse. But it really, you'll just catch everything when you read it out loud because it slows you down. It causes you to think about, you know, whether your writing is natural and seems like speech, and it has so many benefits. So I really recommend that people do that. It's kind of like, I compare it to sometimes like flossing your teeth, you know, like there's data to show that like 80% of people say they floss their teeth, but 20% do. Everybody lies about it. And I feel like a lot of writers like, you know, oh yeah, you got to read it out loud, but then we don't do it. But so it's something you kind of have to kick yourself to do sometimes, but I really recommend it. And just the other thing too, is just to share your work with someone and have a second pair of eyes on it. That's so valuable. And that's something, you know, our content here at LeFleur, nothing goes out without being looked at by at least two people. We never have something that's just, you know, one person wrote it, edited it, proofed it, because you get fatigued, right? And then you just, you know, your brain starts to paper over your own mistakes. You just don't see the gaps in your own writing. And so there's just so much benefit to having someone, you know, look at, and it doesn't have to be even an accomplished writer necessarily. Just have someone, you know, in your office, an office assistant or someone on your legal team, just look over the article and say, hey, do you notice anything? You know, can you proof this for me? And I think you'd be amazed at how often they catch things that you wouldn't have thought of.
Yeah, definitely.
Because everything that you do seems natural to you, right? So it's like, I think everyone's experienced that. Yeah. So there's just a huge benefit to that, I think.
I think, too, that people, like your brain fills in gaps when you're reading your own work. You know, you sort of, you're immune to your own mistakes. And so you end up looking over things and glossing over things that are flagrantly wrong sometimes just because you know what you meant to say, and your brain will do the work of fixing that for you while you're reading.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they've done studies too on, you know, looking at your own work, some of them I'm familiar with from teaching, and that people can find 60 to 80% of their mistakes just by reading something of their own, you know, once. I always encourage people to not do that immediately after they're done though. So if you are going to self-edit, let it cool.
Right. Take time. Yeah. I think we've all, you know, you're fatigued right after you wrote it.
Yeah.
It's always good to give it 5-10 minutes, whatever you can spare,
yeah,
you know, before you come back to it. So I want to circle back to ideation a little bit because obviously that's a really important part of the process. You know, your idea is the core of what you're doing, you know, the core of the value you're bringing with your content. And so you mentioned this, you know, condensation process, which is a really good metaphor where you're kind of pulling stuff out of the air. I just want to mention, too, that, you know, I think a lot of writers know this, that, you know, this process kind of is an ongoing thing. It's not something you want to really shut off. But if you don't have a way to record these ideas, you know, don't rely on your own memory. I think we've all had the experience where I do this all the time, where in my house I'll put something away and I'll be like, I'll just remember where I put that. And then 2 weeks later, I'm just furious, you know, looking for whatever, you know, the pen that I need or something like that. And ideas are kind of the same way. You know, at the time it seems indelible. You're like, that's fine. I'll just remember that. But if you don't write it down, if you don't have a record, you're going to lose things. You know, I remember reading a story about how Keith Richards from the Rolling Stones wrote, you know, the riff from I Can't Get No Satisfaction. He kept a tape recorder by his bed, and he apparently woke up in the middle of the night and hummed that riff in his almost in a half awake state. And then he went back to bed. In the morning, he was, you know, he was like, what is this? You know, and he had a song out of it. And he didn't remember writing it. You know, it was just, if he hadn't had that tape recorder there, you know, huge song lost. And I think there's a lesson in that for any kind of creative person, you know, or even if you don't fancy yourself a creative person, you know, you're trying to come up with ideas, you know, you're marketing. You need something to record ideas as they happen or you'll lose them, you know, and you never know when they're going to strike. So try to keep a notepad on you. Or even just use, you know, I use sometimes my iPhone's voice recorder, voice memo function. You know, if you're driving and an idea comes, you can turn that on and, you know, not having to be trying to jot things down, which, you know, any attorney would frown on, I hope, because it's pretty dangerous. But just having something there, you know, to catch that condensation, as you put it, I think that could, you know, provide a lot of value and really help with your ideation process. I think it'll get you thinking more throughout your day, too, about, you know, what ideas, you know, naturally kind of occur to you from things you see.
Yeah. I had a professor in college who, you know, he's a photography professor, and I took a class with him. And just everywhere we were, he always saw, he saw photographs, right?
Yeah,
oh,
right.
That'd be a great shot. That'd be a great shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar with writing, which is getting back at exactly what you're saying. Like, you have to sort of have a mentality of kind of looking out for these ideas. You know, what could I say about this? Or what could I talk about this? Or would this be something that's interesting to people? And yeah, having a mentality of taking those things and keeping track of them, however you do it, whether it's a memo on your phone or keeping a pencil and paper next door.
Mm-hmm. The more you do it, yeah, the more you think in terms of blog post ideas. Another thing, too, that I think is pretty helpful, you know, first of all, if you can, just try to put yourself in the shoes of your audience and think about what, you know, a general readership, you know, a kind of your average client, a prospective client would want to read. You know, a lot of attorney websites and blogs I see, I have to believe that either the attorneys aren't doing that or it's just not something that they're very good at. Because I see so many attorney blogs where I can just tell that everything is, you know, directed at another attorney. It's just really dense, you know, it's this kind of lofty, intricate stuff. And it's like no general person is going to understand this, you know. So try to put yourself in the shoes of your readership. And if you find that difficult, you know, just ask people around you. You know, ask your friends, ask your family, ask people, you know, you encounter acquaintances, you know, what they would want to ask an attorney, what they want to read about, you know, a legal topic or a legal issue. I mean, most people have had questions about how the law works at some point. So just ask them and find out what they want to hear about, you know, and then think, you know, you can funnel it down a little bit to your audience, you know, maybe relate that topic to your practice areas. But it'll give you a great starting point of what people are really curious about, you know, in terms of the law.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more.
Another thing you can do to come up with some great ideas, and, you know, we do this all the time at LaFleur. There's a saying, you know, famous saying, it's been attributed to many people, but the saying is, and it's been attributed to like Picasso, you know, and various artists like that. It's good artists copy, great artists steal, right? And John Lennon from the Beatles said this. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with going out to their attorney sites and, you know, find a blog you like and see what, or that is successful in Google as well, and see what they're writing about, you know, find topics that they tackle that are interesting. And obviously, you know, you don't want to plagiarize or wholesale steal content. I'm not advocating that in any way. But what you can do is, you know, look at issues they're talking about and think, you know, what could I bring to the table on this issue? So maybe go through, you know, some attorney blogs and find 10 topics that you like, write them down, and then come up with, you know, your own unique angle and what you can bring to that topic, and then create your own blog post out of that.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great, we do this, you know, I go through attorney blogs all the time for ideas. And I think it's a great way to generate, you know, some thoughts and, you know, just getting some material to get you started.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing too, is to look at, like you said, what's doing well on Google. And see what holes are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did they miss?
What
are they not doing? What could you do to provide a better product than what they've put out there? You know, everyone's got a real focus on getting on that first page of Google, and with good reason. 77% of traffic or something goes to the first page of Google. And so what you can do is poke around a little bit, see what people are doing really well, but also see what people aren't doing well, and fill in those gaps and provide something that no one else has provided.
Right. And, you know, another source for good content, too, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, necessarily a blog topic on a legal issue. You can make it a little more focused on your firm, actually share some success stories that you've had with clients. We have one particular client who I know has done really well with his success stories. And I think it's because, you know, they do them in a way so much that it's dealing with a legal issue, but it's also framing it in terms of a human story. You know, you're telling this person's story and then explaining how their legal process played out, how you're able to help them, and, you know, why the case impacted their lives, really. So think about, you know, clients you've worked with that you have a great relationship with, that have experienced a lot of success, and maybe contact them and ask them if, you know, they'd work with you to tell their story. And I think that's a great source for blog posts, too.
Definitely. I think on that particular client's site, it's the most successful content consistently. They have a lot of successful content on their website, you know, across the blog and their website core pages as well. It's a very successful website, but those success stories really stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And they consistently do well over a long period of time.
Right. And, you know, the last thing I want to talk about is really judging how well you're doing at blog posts, because, you know, you can blog every day, but if you don't know how the blog posts are performing, you're kind of in the dark as to where you should go. You know, you want to, I mean, it's great to get a base of content using these tips we're talking about, but at some point you want to start digging into data and refining your process, right? And, you know, you're kind of our analytics, resident analytics expert, let's say, our go-to data cruncher guy. So why don't you talk a little bit about how attorneys can maybe get started at looking how their blog posts are performing and then, you know, refining their process from there.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things you can do. I think one of the first things you should do is look in Google Analytics and see what gets the most traffic, what's doing well. That'll give you kind of a baseline look at, okay, what posts are standing out to people, what posts are bringing more people to my site, and what posts have fallen flat. And you want to do that over a long timeline. You want to look at different timelines, but I think a good way to get started is to look at a long timeline. So open up Google Analytics, pull up the last year of data, and take a look at the blog posts on your site that have done really well.
You know, some of the attorneys might not know, just to give a, how do you sign up for Google Analytics? How do you get that going on your site?
Oh, yeah. There's like a tag that you have to install on your website, and then sign up for your account, and then you associate the two together.
Got it.
Yeah, and there's tutorials up the wazoo that you can find to, you know, how do I start doing Google Analytics on my site? And some sites even come prepackaged with analytics software that you can kind of dig into. And if you don't have Google Analytics installed, you can look at that data instead. So once you have a baseline understanding of how and what blog posts are doing well, make a list of them, figure them out, and take a look at, okay, what are the characteristics that we have here? Do they have really catchy titles? Are they really long form pieces of content? Are they short form pieces of content? Is it content that talks about a topical issue? Is it content that talks about a more evergreen issue, something that is going to apply for many, many years? And once you kind of categorize and sift and sort these different types of content, then you can kind of start to get, you'll see patterns emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see, okay, what blog posts have done really well, and what can I do to recreate that experience in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So hopefully you kind of start out with broader ideas. You know, like, you know, we have a lot of evergreen topics that we kind of tend to return to, especially when we're establishing an attorney's site, you know, like what to do after an auto accident or something like that. But as you kind of look at this data, you'll refine and kind of make these topics, you know, a little more in depth, you know, dig into a really particular issue you know, around whatever your practice area is, auto accident law or family law. You know, get kind of more granular, right, we hope, with these blog topics. And then that's how you really bring, you know, unique insights too. I mean, to really, you know, focus in the smallest portion of a topic that you can really dig into, I think.
Yeah, and I don't think your site's going to rank for that, you know, five things to do after an auto accident, for example. It's a broad topic, and, you know, every attorney has done that topic.
Yeah, definitely.
And you may have unique insight, and it may be really helpful for the people who are already on your site. So it's not like you should just disregard a topic because you're not going to rank in Google. It's going to be a very helpful topic to your audience. But exactly like you're saying, it's a great idea to, if that post does well, or, you know, if you find that people find it to be helpful, then take a unique angle and look at it at a much more nuanced level. You might look at social media, for example. What did you do about social media after a car accident? That's something that I think people in our digital age, you know, that's something that people would be interested in. How should I handle social media after a car accident? What should I post? What shouldn't I post? What's going to be considered evidence? What isn't going to be considered evidence? And, yeah, so a lot of different angles where you take a broad topic that maybe just done okay and narrow it down and focus it.
Right. Okay, so that's, you know, that we're going to wrap up on this blog post discussion, but I think it's been really informative. I've even learned a lot, and I hope you have too, you the listener. Dave, you know, we all have things to learn, but Dave knows a lot already. So we want to thank Dave for coming on here today with us and sharing his insight. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, thanks. It's been great.
Okay, that concludes our inaugural episode of Legal Marketing Radio. We'll be back in 2 weeks with some more discussion on content creation, including how to write better headlines and what kinds of content, you know, perform best on law firm websites. Again, I'm your host, Stephen Kent. And if you have a question or a topic that you want featured on the podcast, just send an email to legalmarketingradio@lafleur.marketing. Thanks for tuning in to Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur Legal Marketing.